Hey, everybody, welcome to the Friday edition of the Daily Friend podcast. That's right, this is your lunchtime briefing brought to you proudly by the Institute of Race Relations and the Daily Friend. The Daily Friend. You can find all our writing, news, analysis, and opinion on the Daily Friend website. That's dailyfriend.co.za. Let me repeat that. That's dailyfriend.co.za. I sounded like Porky Pig there. let me introduce who I have in studio. I have the fellas up in here. I'll begin, I'm sitting opposite them this time. You guys know the layout of the studio. I've got Nicholas Lorimer, who's one of our writers and analysts here at the IRR. Pranik, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thanks, Sikle.
Awesome, brother man. And we've got, of course, a face who's no longer new, but you guys are loving, including a viral tweet over this weekend. We'll cross that over just now. Hadaman Pretorius, bro, how are you?
I am fine, thank you very much, Sikle.
And of course, we have the man himself, the guys who I'm noticing in the comments is very, very popular, which is a very good thing. Gabriel Crosser, brother man, how are you doing?
How's it, Sikle?
Awesome, guys. Fellas, we're going to hop straight into it. And let's begin with something which is, I think it's the most topical thing right now. It's trending right now on Twitter. Johannesburg CBD yesterday was an absolute, nearly swore, mess with essentially, and again, I won't pin it on just foreign nationals. It was just a complete breakdown of the rule of law. Here are riot police, well-armed, well-resourced, essentially being chased away by... it must have been thousands. The numbers, if you look at the videos, are insane. Allegedly foreign nationals, but really just people who just stoned the heck out of those vehicles and they bugged out of there. What's going on, guys? Why is there a breakdown in the rule of law in South Africa?
Well, I mean, that's a long answer to that question. But in this immediate case, the police seem to have gone into to take away to raid for counterfeit goods,
yeah,
and go after business owners who didn't own licenses, who didn't have licenses, and as a result, the business owners got really upset and chased them away. Now we do know that there are a lot of foreign national shop owners in that part of the city,
yeah,
which is probably why this has been blamed on foreign nationals. And I think that one of the things that's kind of not being talked about here is that the cycles of xenophobic violence that we've had, I think, are creating these kind of almost like militia type groups around the country. So the people who have been burning trucks on the N3 for allegedly hiring too many foreign drivers are the sort of the South African version.
Yeah.
But I think the ability of shop owners in the CBD to organize and drive off basically riot police is an example of how foreigners are organizing their own versions. And this is something that the sort of elite circles don't really catch on, because that's xenophobia, right, is not really in our...
But also I think it's kind of new. I grew up in Yeovil and I still live there. And during the various xenophobic attacks that have sort of gone around the country, Yeovil has been a safe haven for a lot of foreigners to flock to because there are so many there. But it wasn't the case that foreigners were sort of had weapons and were chasing people away. It's just if you went to a place where foreigners are outnumbering locals, then you can expect the sort of mobs of self-righteous justice not to come through there. I think this thing of fighting back is a bit new. I've got a lot of connections in Little Addis Ababa, Jeppe. On Jeppe Street in town, sometimes it's officially called the Fashion District, just south of the railway line, sort of east of Brie taxi rank. And they have, you know, the stories that have come out there and that have been well reported, although easily forgotten, have been of the police going in, raiding people's stuff, confiscating the stuff, then the police selling it themselves. To make a bit of a profit. That's a bit irritating. And then there was a series where they tried to set up stalls. There were these sort of metal container boxes that they said people can go into only if they get licenses. Well, guess what? If you want to get a license, there's an official procedure that you can go through. It's a nightmare. So it ends up being an opportunity to bribe the police so they make more money. I'm not saying all of the police are corrupt, but definitely there are cases where the stringent rules that are established to curtail free enterprise get taken advantage of by corrupt police, by desperate workers, desperate entrepreneurs trying to make a buck. And the only way that you can do it is to buy back your own stuff after it's been confiscated and then pay a bribe of not just like R5. Hey, this is not like a Coca-Cola thing when you get pulled over by the cops. This is like R20,000, R30,000 for this stuff. And just to be clear, Little Addis, or the Fashion District in the CBD of Joburg, the rental space there for commercial rentals is more expensive per square meter than a lot of Sandton. And you want to know why? It's because if you go into the Mall of Africa, as it's called, the one, it's not the big one in Midrand, the little one in Little Addis, it is chock-a-block full of producers, of consumers. There's not a meter's being wasted. Whereas in Sandton, we just heard last night, about 25% of commercial real estate space is basically unused because they built too much and there's a glut in supply.
Guys, both Nicholas and Gabriel are raising something which I think is at the heart of this issue, perhaps, but is missed, of course, by the mainstream analysis, the mainstream news media. Right now, the preoccupation is on, oh, foreigners versus South Africans. Oh, look at how the police have soft gloves with foreigners. I mean, I'm looking at tweets right now.
Yeah.
But you guys are raising the actual, perhaps, real issue here. It's the state. It's a sense of statism that is, on the one hand, going after, let's call a spade, productive people. I mean, these are not, you know, vagabonds who are sort of lounging around. They're entrepreneurs. They're building, they're building sectors and, you know, commerce, et cetera, et cetera. And I can understand the frustration. Herman, I'm going to bring you in here because, you know, as liberals, we are big advocates of the market and actually allowing individuals and really people, families, to be able to build an income. And trading is one of those things, the ability to freely trade. Can we reasonably say that this is maybe a, and I use this word loosely, a reasonable expectation from an angry people when they see the state bearing down on them, almost unfairly to an extent? You know, Nicholas was mentioning having to have a license and a this and a that. Here are people saying, stuff it. We're trading, we're creating value. Why are you bearing down on us?
Well, the first question I have is, when we say counterfeit goods, I haven't been able to figure out what exactly these counterfeit goods are. If people want to buy these goods, I mean, who the hell is the police to tell them, no, these are counterfeit goods, you cannot buy these things? And as Gabriel says, that then just opens the door to manipulation of the system. Whether this is whether these foreign nationals have an expectation to be treated better, well, I would have hoped so, but honestly, with the South African track record in recent years regarding foreign nationals and free trade, it's sadly kind of expected that these two issues collide in a very violent manner. And then you add the corruptness of the police, you add the fact that they're not incredibly well trained, and you have a perfect storm for people who are industrious, who cannot claim social grants because perhaps they are not legal citizens, so they cannot actually go through those channels. So the only way they can make a living is by being industrious.
And just let me open it up to you guys again. Excuse me. No one on this panel is saying, you know, there shouldn't be foreigners in this country. And, you know, that's nowhere near the message we're saying. Neither are we saying it should be just free for all willy-nilly. You need a strong, stable rule of law and a framework in which people can come to this country legally, you know, to work and to be productive and et cetera, et cetera. Or even just to flee war zones. Like, you know, asylum seekers is a
legit thing. Somalia, Ethiopia. Absolutely. DRC. Jesus.
But I think the real problem that we have here is that you have a state which hasn't done its basics right. Now there is a perceivable
A whole range of
problems that are now sort of falling together, including the corruption by the state, and it's causing this sort of violent brew that we're seeing in pockets of Johannesburg, which are said to be, you know, mostly foreign nationals living there, whether legally or illegally. What do we do to fix this, fellas?
Well, I think one of the things we need to do is properly reform our border control. Currently, we have a serious issue where, I mean, I've personally done something like this where I've actually crossed the border into Zimbabwe illegally once to show how easy it was to do. And it is very easy.
The views expressed on the show are not those of... Just kidding.
And I did that because we were trying to demonstrate that it was incredibly easy to cross the borders. If you want to come to this country illegally, it's very easy. So that is number one that they need to stop. But we also then would need to improve our legal processes because currently it's just an opportunity for bribery and corruption for the most part. I think, though, that one of the larger things that this shows is that the police are just unable to control a large amount of the large areas of the country. There are so many examples, as I mentioned earlier, the N3 truck burning stuff.
Yes.
Is now this. There's even in the Kalini case, which Gabriel's written so much about, the police didn't really seem to have much control over the town. and they were ineffective at best. So there's sort of a general, all of these things are the symptoms of a general breakdown in state capacity.
Absolutely, which is a worry. Gabriel, a breakdown in the rule of law, how do we fix this?
Oh man, yeah, you need good police.
Yeah.
You need good lawyers, good judges, and an efficient bureaucracy behind it. You know, one thing, just to give a shout out to the foreign nationals, one thing that's very difficult about them is that about their lives is it's very difficult to process your asylum papers. But a lot of them have processed their asylum papers properly. Mm. That doesn't mean that they get the kinds of residency status that they need to open a bank account. Mm. So those businesses are very cash heavy, and if you want to take the time to go down to Jeppy Street in town and go speak to some foreign nationals, I almost guarantee you that the first complaint that you'll hear is because we've got cash going around and people know we've got cash going around, we get hit. Mm. Those businesses get hit and everything gets stolen. And so your whole business needs to start over again every time that happens. And that's because we've got, we need to have good, proper banking rules. And so to open a bank account, you need to sort of be able to hit certain marks, but you can't hit those marks without getting the paper that you need. And the asylum paper is not enough. The sort of refugee status resident paper is not enough. So they get sort of caught between the two stools of the little bit of the bureaucracy that doesn't work and that is enforced. And that just breeds that creates an incentive for violent theft, and the police are nowhere to be seen in terms of protecting them from violent theft. So really, I mean, in the Central Business District, it's crazy. There is at least R1 trillion worth of infrastructure there that is going largely to waste. The only people that aren't wasting it really are South Africans and foreign nationals that are trying to make businesses there in a small way. When the big business guys come in and the big politicians come in, I've seen it from Yeovil every year since 1996. People coming in and saying, we've got a new plan of how we're going to turn town around. And it never really works. Maybe you get a little pocket in Mabaneng, it rises, it falls. You get a little pocket in around the Market Theatre, it rises and falls. But that the heart of town, the heart of Hillbrow, the only people who've managed to make buildings safe, who've managed to put in thumbprint detectors and have the water work and the lights work and this kind of basic thing so that families can live there and it's close to work, they've almost uniformly been entrepreneurs who've started out poor, and some of them have been South Africans and some of them have been foreign nationals. But it's very difficult for them to really harness the true value of that infrastructure as long as town remains unsafe.
Absolutely. And guys, just as a quick word to the listeners, we probably will be writing on these issues and others because there have been other incidents of the breakdown of the rule of law. I mean, Nicholas has mentioned them, that from the N3 trucks being burned to the Joburg CBD. And hey, even the Tswane CBD was a complete meltdown with SAMWU, the Municipal Workers Union, who are looking for, I think, is it 18% or 16% pay hike? Absolutely trashing the city, going into state parking lots, getting vehicles out, driving them. It's just a complete mess. Yeah. And at the heart of it, as we discussed here, is cops who just have no handle over any of this.
Yeah, so one of the things I've been doing this morning is trying to confirm reports that I've already received before putting it into writing and reporting it as fact. I'd like to get more sources to confirm this, but I have had reports as to yet unconfirmed of municipal strikers intimidating those people who want to come to work, violently intimidating them and forcing subcontractors, barricading and stopping subcontractors to get in there. And so what's happened is in some places the electric grid has been collapsed. So you turn or you go to the fuse box, the substation out on the street, you turn the electricity off for a whole suburb, and then you stop anyone else from coming in and being able to turn it back on. And, there is a word for this. It's terrorism. Absolutely. And I need to remind our listeners of, I think, one of the great little quips by Gareth van Onselen, and no one's got a barb sharper than that guy, that the ANC has probably been able to wreck more infrastructure and do more of this infrastructure terrorism by turning off power and so on after they came to power than they did during the struggle.
And it's a weird casual sedition, isn't it? Like almost like this, we can't really call it treason quite yet because they're not looking to overthrow the state, but they're definitely looking to subvert some elements of it.
Make the country ungovernable.
To get their way. Yeah. Nick?
Yeah, oh, this is not new in South Africa. I mean, unions have held us to ransom for a very long time.
Yep, yep.
But one of the this is not particularly new in terms of municipal services either. I remember a story from when I was in local government in Johannesburg, where allegedly some city power employees had purposely sabotaged significant infrastructure and caused huge outages. And even though the city seemed to know who it was specifically, no single person was fired.
Can I say something about that? That's so disturbing. Is this case that we've discussed, the Dunlop case that was taken to the Constitutional Court, where 2015 violent strikes lasted a month and a half. The business owners got an interdict against the violent strikers. The police never really showed up to stop it. Cameras were destroyed. Places were petrol bombed. Huge amounts of machinery taken out. And what Dunlop said, you can come back and work for us once they finally, you know, once the booze ran out and the anger ran out, and they could reopen the business. They got control of it again. They said to all the people who weren't there, all the workers who weren't there, who had been intimidated and harassed into not coming to work, please come back to work. You're very welcome. And anyone who was there, please come back to work. Just tell us what you saw. Because if you were there striking peacefully and then you saw someone else petrol bomb the place, then just tell us. And then you don't even have to say whose name it was. Just tell us what you saw, and we will take you back to work. And the Constitutional Court, and that was the unions took umbrage with that. They said you can't expect your workers to go tell you if they've seen other workers breaking the business. That's violating their rights to solidarity as workers. And this case was taken all the way to the Constitutional Court, with lower courts ruling that's an absurd line of reasoning. And the Constitutional Court said, no, that's perfectly accurate. You must not expect your workers to tell you if other workers are stealing or breaking stuff. So if I see Nicholas stealing some stuff, our France shouldn't expect me to go and tell on him, because that's what the law now says.
And guys, just maybe as a last thoughts on this particular topic on unionism. Again, let me speak for the House. I don't think any of us have a problem with people voluntarily coming together as a group of workers to organize. The problem in this country is, you know, that voluntarism is a bit questionable, because you get closed shop agreements, for example, and also a lot of the unions are yoked to politics.
The problem here is the unions act like a mafia.
Absolutely. And they do that because, as I said, they're yoked to politicians and politics, and they know that there's no accountability because of that, you know.
You can't get punished for breaking stuff. You can't get punished for harassing other workers. You can't get, I mean,
people are intimidated all the time.
Yeah. And you get celebrated in the media.
Absolutely.
Heck, the line is pretty sympathetic. And it's not just unions. It's also like student movements. When student movements were breaking, burning down libraries and intimidating, harassing other students.
Killing people.
The media was like very apologetic. It was very like, oh, you've got to understand these guys' pain, and you must know how tough it is to be a student.
And look how heroic these young freedom fighters are.
Yeah.
Guys, last topic that I want us to sort of look into, just a quick chat about it really, Nick, we've been, and I'll lead us into this one because it's a very interesting one. You know, there's a precedent that was set in the courts, you know, with the public protector having been asked to pay costs for the legal counsel because she lost that particular case. Enter a one Maite Nkowane Mashabane, who used to be the Minister of Rural Land Reform, and let me get my facts straight, the former Rural Development and Land Reform Minister, Maite Nkowane Mashabane, she was hit with a personal cost order on Friday after the department, her department, had failed to comply with the court order to draft a plan for the redevelopment of District 6. Now, District 6, for those who don't know, is basically what's currently called, or was called, Zona Bloem in Cape Town, just outside the Cape Town CBD, and historically was a place where, you know, sort of a mix of races was living. And it was cosmopolitan, you know, Muslim community, Christian, you name it.
Everything the nationalists
and
hated.
Absolutely. And here came the apartheid government with bulldozers, kicked those people out and essentially shoved them off into the Cape Flats and various communities around there. And thankfully, a lot of them, you know, got their property back in terms of their property rights back. But it's been a long and drawn out process of firstly redeveloping it, assigning who the beneficiaries are, which is not actually done. I should actually commend the state for that. But it's now this ongoing wrangle. And of course, the courts recently slapped the minister with this court order because she had failed to comply with a court order basically saying you now actually have to redevelop this space. The real issue I want us to discuss on this one is two things, really. We've been saying for a while that there is a serious and legitimate need to get land restitution right in this country. And yes, to an extent, land reform. But really, the main thrust for me is land restitution. Those who were dispossessed by the state historically, whether by the colonial state or apartheid, need to have that property either brought back or compensated. Number two, is there, and this is what I want you chaps to chat about, is there a legitimate, is this a good way of holding state officials and politicians accountable for them to be slapped at the cost of bad decisions that they make?
You know, Sihle, this is interestingly one of those jurisprudential developments I've been keeping a bit of an eye on over the past few years. Let me quickly explain to our listener. There's something called the corporate veil. The corporate veil is where the individual actor of a corporate entity is protected as being a member of this corporate entity. The corporate entity then becomes the legal target or the legal person. So the private individual is not, you know, liable for the acts of the corporate entity. And this applies to things like the government, government departments, municipalities. However, the courts have, over the past few years, started considering a softening or at least a partial piercing of this corporate veil, where they have, for example, the public protector having a personal cost order put against her rather than the office. There have been instances where municipalities have been burdened with some legal responsibilities after private citizens did things municipalities should actually do. So this is a very fascinating development in terms of law. And it's actually one of the last refuges to which the courts can turn, seeing as the other manners, the other options for holding to account seem to have failed, because government departments, if the minister is held or if the department is held liable, oh, they get taxpayer money, they pay the fine. So there's no real accountability there. So this is a development the courts have been in a way forced into, to be the holder to account of these people. And that's positive in a sense, but it's dangerous because we know that we have a state that has no problem gunning for the private sector the moment it has a new gun. Mm. And I'm afraid as much as this might be in the short term a good thing for state accountability, it's we're giving just another weapon in the arsenal for a state that might want to gun for other private individuals behind the corporate veil.
Nick, positives and negatives to this, but surely cuffing politicians is quite a good thing, isn't it?
No, I think it's quite a good thing, and I think Herman laid it out very well there. Yeah. And the main thing here is that this is something that's been people being forced to go to because the judiciary isn't being effective in charging the state. You can go to any municipality in the country, basically, and you'll probably find somewhere the municipality was ordered by the court to provide some sort of service or fix some sort of issue. I know, for example, that in Protea South and Soweto, the people there for a long time didn't have toilets. Mm. And a court ordered them to give, you know, sort of very basic national requirements on toilets, and it took, I think, 2 years of additional fighting before they arrived with temporary toilets. And that's exactly the kind of thing that is leading the courts into this breaking of our sort of legal precedence in order to get some more effectiveness out of the government. But ultimately, the main problem here is that the government is not being held accountable properly by kind of citizenry, yes. And it's so dysfunctional that the court is trying to fill this role, but it's something that it actually can't do properly. Yes. It's something that's beyond its ability, and it's not a good idea, I think, to empower the courts so much, because ultimately you're going to force politicians into a position where they either have to disobey the courts completely, in which case the rule of law sort of collapses, or the courts are going to become too powerful and act like dictators.
It comes back to civic engagement, Sihle. If we want to have a functioning country, we as citizens need to step up. We cannot rely on the courts to be the outsourcer of our civic engagement. We need democratic accountability. Then the courts can have a general protection of all rights.
Guys, thank you so much. Wow, that's that last topic is actually quite thought-inspiring, and I hope we're going to write in the Daily Friend on that. But yeah, guys, let's continue providing news, analysis, and opinion to our listeners, who I'm beginning to hope are are enjoying our shows. Guys, remember, you can find all of our analysis, all of our writing, all of our opinion on the Daily Friend website. That's dailyfriend.co.za. And hey, consider supporting the colleagues you heard over here by becoming a friend of the IRR. That is our crowdfunding campaign, which allows us to be able to buy the equipment, to put out the content, and really to support colleagues who are putting out some great content for you guys. Now, how do you become a friend of the IRR? Simple. You can SMS your name to 32823. An SMS will cost you R1. Terms and conditions to apply. And someone will give you a call and sign you up for a monthly debit order. Alternatively, if you don't like all of that, you can just find us online, irr.org.za/join. And yeah, you can also sign up electronically for a debit order of about R90 per month. Guys, remember, there are other shows that you need to look out for. All of them are on the Daily Friend website. You have Two Crickets in the Thorn Bush with Nicholas and Gabriel. Awesome, awesome, awesome show. Great content. And those two are added with interesting topics. And you can look out, of course, for the Big Liberty Show, which comes at you once a week. Sorry. And this week's episode featured Germ, the cartoonist, and Franz Cronier, and of course, Gabriel. So listen in on that, because we talk some serious stuff on there. Guys, thank you so much. We will see you next week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on the Daily Friend podcast.